Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to PWT Talks NXT.
Are we getting a lot of feedback, or is that just me? All right, maybe that's just me. I'm Kelly Wells. I'm your host. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. Tom, who are you? Oh, did I lose you? That is no good if I did. Well, I don't know. I don't know if I have Tom. If you are on the show, go ahead and text me and let me know. So, not sure what's going on, but I'm going to try to find Tom in the meantime. Okay, so today we're talking NXT for December 21st. We're talking... Tom, are you there now?
Oh, yes. I'm... Okay, we're on. Cool. Hello, my baby. Hello, my darling.
Yeah, this is going to be an all-timer of an awkward beginning because I was able to start, didn't have you, and was hearing feedback. It was just a cavalcade of no good. So with that in mind, we're not really this disorganized people, although I will say that it's usually Nate who calls us in. So he's got that on lock, and I don't do it very often. And lack of practice makes imperfect. Yes, I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or SpookyMilk.games. And you can call us here on the show at 515-605-9345 or email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Now, indeed, we got many, many emails on what feels like a pretty kind of whatever episode of NXT. Yeah, surprised to see as many emails as we did. I think we have six, maybe seven. And we have one caller on the line. We're going to talk main event, Pete Dunne versus Tony D'Angelo, and then we are going to go to the phone lines, and we'll talk about whatever we want to talk about from this NXT show. So let's talk main event. Tom, Tony D'Angelo getting his first big shot in a match with, in a singles match with Pete Dunne. D'Angelo kind of disappeared in the War Games match, so was hoping that we'd see him show out a little bit here. And I feel like he kind of did, showed some power stuff, kind of hung in there with Dunne. Didn't look out of place, which right now is the main goal. Kind of told the story of him being able to overpower Dunne, but Dunne's technique was too much for him in the end. And in 12:49, Pete Dunne beats Tony D'Angelo. They seem to be working toward a possible name tweak with him. He was called Tony D by Vic, by Wade several times, and then referred to himself as Tony D late in the show. Normally, this is not just a nickname thing. This is like a hard change, and we're going to get there. Maybe nobody cares about that but me. But I wouldn't be surprised if a month from now we're just calling him Tony D, which would be great for me because it's shorter to type, and typing names with apostrophes in them, it's secretly like my least favorite thing to have to do on these recaps. Definitely the worst. But that's
and,
a little
and this
thing
coming, and this coming from a Final Fantasy fan.
Yes, but I haven't had to recap
those.
So they can get away with whatever naming conventions they want to do. There are some bad names throughout years. Naming the character Pain, it's just the least. Final Fantasy X-2, just no good. Okay, so let's not get down a Final Fantasy rabbit hole because it's deep. And let's talk main event. Tom, what'd you think?
Final Fantasy XI is still my very favorite video game ever, and there are still some names from it that I don't know how to pronounce because I've only ever read them. multiple apostrophes everywhere. In the years we've been doing this, it still hasn't changed. You can take the majority of NXT main events and the analysis can basically be summed up as, it was a good match. So, it was a good match. And D'Angelo has been, since the refresh, he has been one of the standouts in the ring, and initially with crowd reception as well, but now they're working against that. So unsurprising that he was able to hang with Pete Dunne, but win or lose, just showing that you hang with Pete Dunne is a win for you. So I didn't even think they needed to do the post-match thing unless it's to serve Pete Dunne in some sort of either write-off or hiatus. Just getting a crowbar to the hand is probably not going to be a write-off. But it was a good match. Good for Tony D.
Indeed. Wish there was more to say about that, I suppose. But there sure isn't. Let us go to the phone lines, and we will talk with 814. 814, thanks for waiting. Took a while to get this one set up for a myriad of reasons here, and thanks for holding on. But, let us know who you are and where you're calling from.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Well, hello once again, Ryan. How did you find this week's show?
It was a fine show. I do have a question on this crossover they've been doing with a lot of the main roster talents, such as Matt Riddle and AJ Styles. Do you see anyone else that might be a good fit to a crossover in NXT?
So early on in NXT, in NXT as it is today, so hard to figure out how to say that. I think people know what I mean. Post-game show NXT, we saw a lot of stars visit, and they would do it to refresh matchups. They would do it to refresh themselves, kick the tires on themselves. We'd see people like Sheamus down there when he was kind of on the main roster. We saw Titus O'Neil do like a full month there when they didn't really have much for him on the main roster. It was beneficial to him. It was beneficial to, he got into a mini feud, like a one taping feud with Sami Zayn. We find that there are ways to use these guys that can really help them out. I think the sky's the limit. Obviously, if they can use AJ Styles, they can use just about anyone. Tom and I cover NXT 8 years back, and we recently had, was it Randy Orton on a show? And we just, it did not seem like a place that was for Randy Orton. We had Kane on one episode, and it was so strange to see Kane in the confines of a very small venue, sans pyro and all that stuff. As for who might fit more than anybody else, I think that's a big question. I don't even know where to start. Tom, help me out.
So, of course, with the AJ thing, and I guess I didn't even consider the Riddle thing since he was so recently on NXT, and so far it's been confined to vignettes. Maybe we'll talk about that more later. The AJ thing, it not only feels like, what they used to do in the early Full Sail days, as we've been covering on the VIP side, but it feels so similar to me. This specific one tonight felt so similar to me to what Chris Jericho specifically did with Bray Wyatt. He's coming in as a major babyface from AJ freshly turned. I actually haven't caught up on this week's Raw, but I take it from what I read that he is to be seen as a babyface now, so it's not just a big star shows up at NXT, so he gets cheered. I think he is a babyface now. And it's somebody the name value of which it isn't, it's not like a Roman Reigns where it's kind of weird that they're coming to this venue, but it's somebody who people might tune into, or if they don't, if they catch it on YouTube, they'll at least put stock into what the person says. So when Chris Jericho is standing across from Bray Wyatt, even when he's going to tap him out later. Chris Jericho is saying Bray Wyatt's catchphrases. Chris Jericho is saying, if I lose, I will join the Wyatt family. And that, for me and so many other people, was the introduction to Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family, an act that would go on to be, I mean, I think arguably a main event level act for just about exactly 8 years. When he got released, it was almost 8 years to the point where he got called up. And so clearly what we're seeing on NXT is a belief in Waller, a strong belief in Waller that has been, you know, just so pushed to the forefront over the past 3 weeks. And it's the same exact thing with AJ saying his catchphrases and, yes, playing the character that is contesting Waller, but giving him the AJ rub, as he even, you know, said himself. So I view that as a very effective way to make these younger talents, or new or fresher talents rather, more recognizable. And if there are any others, I think, again, it's about, I think babyface is helpful, but it's not necessary. So you need the name value. I think right now, just scrolling through I guess that's the SmackDown roster that I'm on. The Usos jump out on the SmackDown roster as somebody who could do the same thing, maybe for a tag team, or, you know, it could be in the singles context. That's fine. Who on Raw? I'm not Lashley is a big deal on Raw. That would, I don't know. I guess I was looking at the SmackDown roster and I wanted to pick a male from both brands. They did it very recently with Charlotte, and she's probably still my top pick, so that doesn't feel like a great pick, but yeah, I don't know. I guess I'll stick with Lashley just because I already said it out loud, although he is a big enough player that maybe he's too big to give that rub.
And I'm going to agree with Lashley because I don't want to think about it more, because I think that most of them could work for the right reason. It's weird, Tom. We were talking about, I mean, people talked about the ratings of this show and what you lose by turning it into this show rather than having it be a brand, even though this was the goal of the show in the beginning, and this is the goal of the show now again. I don't know why, but even though we are watching NXT 8 years back, I kind of forgot about stunt casting. I sort of forgot the fact that they can just, I mean, these talents are in many cases right there, and they can just bring them in for a week, and if you miss a week, then you feel like you lost something. And if you're there in Florida, you feel like you got to go because you got to see who's going to be there that week. Now, it's easy to sell NXT out right now, I think. Not like it was in the beginning where it was different, where we saw some sparse crowds while it was still gaining an audience. But yeah, where they had to get real creative where they were. They brought Billy Corgan out. He's like, I can explain.
Oh no. I remember that Cassius Ohno match where in the background there was a dude who was just like sprawled across three levels of the bleachers, just like, hey, this is pretty comfortable.
Oh boy.
I'm gonna switch my answer to Seth Rollins. I think he's enough of a team player that he would do that, even though he's in the main event picture right now. And honestly, if I was booking it, I would put the title on him and then have him drop it back to Big E at WrestleMania. So another borderline one, but I think he's team player enough. And since they almost never bring it up, and Ciampa had a chance tonight and he did not do it, you know, there's a certain era of NXT that he's talking about that Ciampa was. But it would be interesting to have Seth once again reference that he was the first ever NXT champion.
Yep, and that is what I would have jumped in and said. You've got a built-in storyline. No matter who he tangles with, he gets to hold that over their heads. So there you go. Ryan, what else have you got?
My second question is on this Harlan wrestler. Does Brian Kendrick have a lot to do with his training? And maybe that's why they're working at programs, because he's familiar with them.
I would be very surprised if Kendrick was not working with him. I think he's training a great many guys. Now, I would assume he's probably got more to teach guys that are going to work in his style, and Harland is not among those. But he's on hand, so I'm sure he's got a lot to do with his development, because when you're teaching fundamentals, it doesn't much matter what division you belong to or what weight class you are. It's just step forward with your left foot, collar and elbow, simple stuff. So, yes, I would be very surprised if he wasn't involved. That is something I could probably find out, but I don't know how much time it would take. But I would suggest that they have been working together for some time. And also just want to mention, I'm super glad that Kendrick, who was the first to say he threw his own push away, has found his home again in WWE and is doing very valuable stuff behind the scenes, Tom.
Yeah, he's hit a good landing spot. We've recently got tiny bit more of a glance into the inner workings of the PC through the Next in Line promotions that they've been doing on social media, but nothing that hints to me anything that I can confirm one way or another regarding this. So, but we all are speculating the same thing. Because Gacy basically said nothing with his promo, and Kendrick basically said nothing with his promo, my only deduction from this was the exact same thing. Well, Kendrick must be working somewhat closely with Harland in the PC because, you know, as expected, as I said over and over again, it was expected, but Harland did not show us much in his first match because, not because he was bad, but because that match was just a simple beatdown. So I'm guessing that they have been working together and that Kendrick will do a practiced match with Parker Boudreaux, Harland, to show off at least a little bit more of something before he goes back to standing behind Gacy again.
Yeah. I couldn't find anything in the short term, but I did find a picture of him with a full head of hair smiling real cheesily for when he was playing football, and it's wonderful, and you should all look it up. Ryan, what else do you have?
My final question is on Pete Dunne. Does he have, like, a weak jaw? Because it seems like the mouthpiece seems to come into play where it gets taken out and they go after the chin, or is that just something that they like to do as a spot?
I think it's one of those things where to make him tough, you put a mouth guard in him in the first place because you want to make him look like somebody who's been in so many fistfights. He's got to have that because he's going to get punched in the mouth because he's going to throw punches to the mouth. And then because you have it, it becomes something you have to use because it's right there. So you have to. To me, it kind of at times has the opposite effect of making him look weak because he's the only one who needs it. And when you take it out, suddenly he's more vulnerable. So it's definitely an Achilles heel that a really, really tough guy shouldn't have. Maybe I'm overthinking this, Tom.
Ryan, you always bring these sorts of questions, and it is something that's also a question for me that I don't have a definite answer on. I agree with Kelly's assessment of just the characterization of it. But, of course, my own daughter has braces right now, and once she got them in, we went and got a mouth guard because when she's in – you know, when she plays sports at school, you got to protect those. And we've seen Cesaro adopt the mouthpiece after he had that major dental work done after that unforgettable thyborg spot. What else to call it other than that? So all I did to see if there was anything similar for Dunn was Google Pete Dunne teeth. And the first thing that came up was a tweet from February 4th, 2015, when he said, $60 on getting my teeth fixed, bloody wrestling. So, maybe.
Yeah, I guess there you go. And we thank you, Ryan, for – I love it. He's got a three-pack of questions. None of them exactly about the show, but all of them more fun than some of the things I'm going to have to say about certain stuff. Was that big enough for you, Tom? let's go to a long, not a long match exactly, but a long segment. Raquel Gonzalez versus Dakota Kai seems like the end of the feud, and Vic summed it up as such. He just came out and said, this is probably over between these two. Gonzalez beats Kai in about 7 minutes. The bell started during the commercial break, which is one of my least favorite things in the world. I just want to know those exact times. It drives me crazy. I sound like I have to be kidding, but I'm not. So about 7 minutes there, and they brawled for about 7 minutes before that. So 14, 15 minutes this thing went on. I'll tell you what, I don't like street fights in general. I think they should be very short. If you're wrestling with weapons, then the match should be over in 30 seconds. It shouldn't be a long, epic 30-minute bout when you have weapons. You hit somebody with a wrench, it should be over. I'm not a fan of the type of match. That said, I like the way that they framed this one, having this start in the back when Gonzalez is just walking toward the ring, having Dakota jump her. And then we just like, it's this weird sort of unclear thing where they're fighting in the back and the refs are very demonstratively saying over and over the only lines they've obviously been given to say, come on, Dakota, you got to get back to the ring. They said a lot of that. Finally, they do get back to the ring and, fight for 7 minutes, occasionally a wrestling move. Gonzalez wins and says she is not going anywhere until she gets her match with Mandy Rose for the championship. Cora Jade, after the break, shows up and she says, Raquel, I know you want your match with Mandy, but I need to get revenge on them for trying to tear my arm out of its socket. As they are posturing and trying to figure out who's going to get the first shot, Mandy Rose shows up from a pool on the Tron and says that since she's in a giving mood, she will agree to a triple threat match with the two and enjoy the beatdown, at which time Toxic Attraction from behind Gonzalez and Kai attack, and they set up a match for next week. So a tag match, Raquel and Cora Jade against Toxic Attraction, the champs, in what I assume will be non-title. Ups and downs in this whole segment. Cora's got a way to go on the mic. Raquel's got farther to go, which is too bad, but she does. So does Mandy, but that's not going to come. But I will say we got our triple threat New Year's Evil match out of this, and we got a tag team match next week out of this. So really not a lot to complain about in terms of moving stuff forward. Even when this show was doing stuff I didn't love tonight, they were moving things forward and making this a weekly TV show. Who knew, Tom?
Yeah, it's so easy to blow up your problems. It's so easy to play up your breakdown. But life's the same. I'm moving in stereo. I don't know how Mandy was swimming on a rooftop and just knew to open her tap into the Titantron app to go all Phoebe Cade on us, but that's what happened, and okay, it at least allowed Cora Jade a break from, trying to figure out whose line it was next. I don't like beating up on either Cora or Raquel, because both of them show different levels of promise, and Raquel has on and off for years. Even when she was stinking it up in the first round of the first May, it was still like, there's a glimmer though. There's something there. And like, especially after tracking her for this long, it feels bad being down on her, but tonight was not good. I was actually not very high on the match either. Because of Raquel's part in it, Dakota Kai is a wrestler that we've seen make chicken salad out of these kinds of matches. It's like she gets put in street fights and you're kind of like, wait, why? She's not the kind of wrestler that needs a street fight. And then she, like, against Candice LeRae, against Tegan Knox, against whoever, you know, did she have one against EO? I don't know. I'm just making it up at this point. But we've seen her repeatedly have some of the best street fights that we've seen. They're not just garbage weapon matches. I don't know how to get more specific about it. There's just something about the way she approaches them creatively and the way she makes them more believable and less spot-to-spot orchestrated. But Raquel needs so much help with these and is also put in them often because she needs the help of them, that even in those bigger spots that that Dakota excels at, you can see Raquel just sort of like doing what she's practiced and like, okay, I have to put my arms here and okay, I have to, you know, take the flat back like this. And so then she forgets to sell. The most egregious one here was the double stomp on the can, which of course also weird that Dakota wasn't the one that went in the can, because that's usually what happens, Dakota in the can. And then she'll tweet out an embarrassing picture of herself in the can. I love it. But yeah, you just, you know, the unfortunate camera angle, yes, of Raquel protecting herself with her arms rather than just, you know, moving as would be more believable. And then Dakota hits the spot and Raquel just lays there, doesn't like kick her legs or doesn't sell it in any kind of way. It's just like, okay, I achieved that spot, on to the next. And that really sank this after, for me, it really sank this despite their efforts. And I agree with everything about the feud being accelerated, and like part of me wants to forgive that they probably didn't expect to get Dakota back. But yes, even the first part of the feud was brief. I'm saying yes and agreeing to something that I read in an email we haven't brought up yet. But, you know, so there's that answer in advance.
Let me do this email and then you can finish off. How does that sound? JB says, man. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. I couldn't help but feel that the Dakota-Raquel feud fell way below expectations from my perspective. Both matches fell below my expectations from an in-ring perspective. They were fine, but neither blew me away like I believed they could have. Both matches seemed rushed from a storytelling perspective, and the stakes didn't feel as big as they should have. I really feel like NXT has dropped the ball with Dakota, particularly since the 2.0 rebrand. I think it's pretty clear where Raquel is going, but where do you see Dakota going next? Also, the post-match attack by Toxic Attraction was executed so badly it was cringeworthy. Cora Jade turned around, noticed Gigi, and waited a solid 10 seconds, allowing herself to be attacked while not reacting at all. Love the show and go VIP. It wasn't 10 seconds, but she definitely turned and then waited for the spot to happen where a more seasoned wrestler would turn, and if Gigi wasn't ready, she would at least rear back and look like she's going to punch to allow Gigi to block and then get in a shot with the kendo stick. It really did look like a whole lot of no good at that moment. I did see that as well. Yeah, neither of these matches were great. I don't like to go hard on anyone, but I don't ever expect a Raquel match to be great. I mean, ever. I don't know that it's in the cards. I don't know that it can happen. I'm not trying to be mean at all. I just don't know that it's in the cards at all for her to be in a great match at this stage. So yes, dropping the ball with Dakota, I as her biggest cheerleader will agree that they have, but it's not like they've done it at every juncture. She's been part of some of literally the best storylines in NXT ever. Her storyline where she turned on Tegan was huge. Her storyline, what was she just in? With turning on Raquel was very big, and the turn was executed extremely well. The storyline getting to the match was done extremely well. But yeah, now she finds herself in this place where they're asking her kind of to play against type as this crazy character. She's not really, it's not the character that speaks to her, not like, like she'll do whatever. She's up for it, but it doesn't get her like the cocky kind of no-nonsense, but sometimes chicken crap heel that has to hide behind somebody else. Tom, anything else?
Yeah, can't be sure exactly what it is with Korra, whether it's the red light being on and knowing that you're live on TV, whether it's, you know, it could be any number of things.
She's 20. She's supposed to be scared out of her mind,
hey,
kind of thing.
Yeah, that is extremely fair. And she's been in several positions now where that has been revealed. You know, what we see from her in the ring, we can figure that, you know, between the bells, she probably would have been feeding just fine. But in this situation, she isn't sure how to, or she's too nervous to be confident enough to improvise on her own, as we have learned from watching the Ascension stand still as Eddie Edwards ran at them. Feeding is more than just standing still. I guess that was a reverse of the situation. Eddie Edwards was like, no need to go VIP. Eddie Edwards had to do the most ridiculous thing to take a move from the Ascension and literally run at nothing, for no reason.
The Ascension. They're the gift that keeps on giving. We love watching them. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, that sounds like it has to be a lie, but it's always funny.
Yeah, and I do love me some Connor, and I'm not just saying that because I know he's a really loyal listener. No, but even, you know, in the promo, as I suggested, trying to remember whose line it was, being more specific on that, it was like she finished up, and maybe you were able to, you know, deduce more of what you felt it might have been, but like she finished up her line, and I don't know if it was something where Raquel blew her cue and she was supposed to interrupt, and Korra wasn't doing the thing where she's supposed to pretend like she had more to say so she could be interrupted, or if Korra forgot to make it sound like that was the last thing she had to say, so then caught on camera is the moment where she sort of like nods and mouths something to Raquel, like, hey, it's your turn to talk now. That's what the script says. So that was really, really unfortunate. This time of year is like, I love this time of year for wrestling, even though we're staring down the barrel of the Dusty Cup, and that is never a promising prospect. But apart from that, I love this time of year for wrestling, but I hate that my knee jerk to everything is just like, well, maybe they'll show up in the Rumble. So I kind of like don't want to say that about Dakota, because it's just dooming myself to be wrong. But she's been swept aside yet again tonight, as is what happens over and over again with her.
She's been in two Rumbles, and in one she was eliminated by Chelsea Green.
Oh, dear. Oh, man.
If you've ever, like, guys, I have a lot of rage, but normally it only comes out when I'm in my car alone. I have definitely yelled at you if you have driven anywhere in Minneapolis. I have, and it was probably my fault, but I yelled at you because I didn't know what else to do in the moment. So imagine a guy full of rage when Dakota Kai gets eliminated by Chelsea Green. Tom, I'm going to lose something here. You should.
Oh, my gosh. The one last thing I'll add is that, you know, the extended backstage portion of this whole match, as it were, I'm forgiving of those kind of things. I still remember that damn pay-per-view where Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins were booked for a match, and instead of having a match proper where the bell rang, they beat each other up backstage throughout the entire pay-per-view. And I remember how upset the fan base was on social media, as far as like my exposure to it was at that, you know, the people that I followed and everything. And I could not believe it. I was like, they fought the entire night. They fought more than they would have if they had had a match. Who cares if the bell rang? You had a fight. You got the continuation of the feud whatever. So I don't mean it that way, but like they're trying to make it seem like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that Dakota just attacked her. But we had never been told, and maybe they said something on social media and I didn't, you know, I was wrapping gifts for like 8 hours today. I was not looking at the WWE NXT Twitter account. But they had never told us that this match was supposed to start the show after the Ciampa promo. So what we see is the Dakota attack, and I'm thinking, oh, so that'll play into, I guess, maybe our main event, I don't know. And Vic has to contextualize that for us after the fact. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to be retroactively surprised by it. So I thought that could have been handled better as well. This whole thing was just like the ingredients were there, and it really did not come off.
Okay, so let's go to the one other long match in this thing. This was a little lighter on wrestling minutes, 41 of them, give or take. A handful of seconds, I can't be sure because of that opener. The Creed Brothers versus Grizzled Young Veterans. This went 10:36 and to a double disqualification. How many of those have there been in the history of NXT? Not a whole lot. Creed Brothers versus GYV. Jacket Time comes out to ringside, and they bring a little table so they can do some announcing in Japanese, but only when they are thrown to by Vic, who does it a few times, which is just probably too many times, but he does it. Briggs and Jensen watch from the ramp also, even though really none of this is overly motivated. I guess there's small stuff going on here, but this is one of the favorite moves of NXT over the years, which is let's review our tag division. They do this a lot where they don't have much of a division, or they haven't, and so they show it to us all at once to say, hey, we've got one. It's bizarre, but it is what they do, and I assume this is heading for a four-way, but that's not always what happens when they do these let's review our tag division moments. Because they did the one with Indus Share, and they never showed up in any kind of four-way or in any big match at all, even though they kept acting like they were going to be in a series of big matches. My cat is incredulous, too. She cannot believe it. But, yes, no winner here. And then afterwards, it was just like kind of a shiftless, nothing brawl outside the ring, and everybody was chanting NXT, and I was like, who are these idiots? What, NXT? And then they chanted, this is awesome, like halfway through Dunn and D'Angelo. And I was like, this is pretty average. And it got to okay. But man, you lower the bar and the live audience is like, nah, it's still just awesome because I'm here watching wrestling. Whatever. I don't have anything too horrible to say. I mean, the match was good, and I assume this is going somewhere, but it was like a 15-minute segment that led to essentially nothing, Tom.
Because what she was trying to say was, yes, of course it's leading to something, Kelly. It's leading to the Dusty Cup, which, like I suggested earlier, for me is unfortunate. I think there might have been one Dusty Cup where I was like, you know what, this one's actually been okay, but they usually bore me to tears. And yeah, this was just saying like, hey, look, we do actually have enough teams to kind of put together what will probably end up being an 8-team tournament with some other people thrown together, or maybe some people that I'm forgetting about. I guess MSK still exists, unfortunately. But yeah, the action in the ring was fine, but I don't know, you know, just having good action in the ring is not enough to put me over the top with this. Vic saying whatever he's going to say and then being like, but I really want to hear from Jacket Time, and then passing over to them just in the most artificial of ways. The only thing that came close to saving it was when they went back to English commentary and what's his darn name? Barrett, Wade Barrett said, well, I agree with Kushida.
Yeah, sure, buddy. Right. Now I agree with Kushida, and I want to say I vehemently disagree with everything that Ikemen Jiro has to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the saving grace. Vic, who essentially is a real life Ned Flanders.
Oh,
basically
dear. Yes.
Was like, I'd like to hear from Sideshow Mal. He did it, man. He's out there. Yeah. I don't know.
What's this? It's Jacket Time with a table? and I'm giving that too much. He didn't give it that much, but oh boy.
Yeah, it existed, folks. It's a thing that happened. Dexter Lumis faces Trick Williams in your crossover. Trick has a long way to go in the ring. I love Trick on the outside I think he's an awesome second. I love what he has done for the Carmelo Hayes act. Like B-Fab, we knew that sometime we had to see this person in a match. And like B-Fab, the match happened. And I was like, well, I like the role they're in. But there's some work to be done. He's got one of the smallest move sets I've ever seen in a match this long. Very, very basic stuff. And then he had to take the Fez press from Loomis early on, and he kind of didn't know how to fall into a Fez press. So it was awkward, like not in a dangerous way, because the Fez press is absolutely not a dangerous move, but it just looked really awkward. But we did get some story out of this. Grayson Waller shows up and attacks Loomis from behind afterwards. Loomis had a thumbs up moment in this as well, where Carmelo Hayes was on the outside and Loomis gets dumped, and it looks like they're going to come to blows, but Loomis just does the thumbs up. Glad they found a way to keep that going, because I like it. And that was because Hayes was about to be blindsided by who? Gosh, so many things happened on this show.
Was it Strong?
Yeah, Roderick Strong. Strong and Hayes fought to the back, because we are going to get title versus title from them at the next show. Loomis does, of course, go after Trick Williams. I did like the finish to this, even though I didn't like the match all that much. Williams tried to hit Loomis with the shoe. Instead, from that, Loomis sidesteps it, puts him in the silencer, and then your visual that Williams has fallen asleep is that he drops the shoe. A little thing. I really, really dug it. A good finish that Pat Patterson himself would be proud of. So, yeah, and Waller attacks, and then we get the AJ Styles stuff, but that seems like a different conversation altogether. Anything on that match, Tom?
Definitely a different conversation, although I was surprised that that wasn't the crossover. I understand, of course, with the Waller attack, not only are they setting up the match for next week, but they were trying to segue into it. But that came, like, what, 7-8 minutes after the hour? And even on my stream, I'm pretty sure I'm a minute or two behind everybody else, at least a full 60 seconds. But anyway, yeah, I also really liked the finish of this. It was toward the finish where I started to realize, oh, I should have, and I intended to going in, but I should have paid much more attention to Trick Williams in this. But instead, my eyes were entirely on Dexter Loomis, because he had his best NXT match yet by far against Carmelo Hayes 2 weeks ago, I want to say. And the shoe was a callback to that. I don't know if that's going to continue being a thing for Trick, but it was definitely a callback to that. I was just so impressed with not the, you know, both sides of the match, sure, but especially Loomis, because it's in subtle ways, because he, you know, his character is what it is, but he has really used this this Indy Hartwell storyline to which is all but, you know, background at this point, but he's really used it to imbue his character with more personality, again, to a relative extent, because his character is what it is. But it's enough that through experiencing a storyline that made him a more endearing character, and now imbuing just a little bit into his ring work, his matches are so much more engaging. And it feels like he is, you know, against all odds, you know, based on how he seemed for so long there for a while, a character to really care about, and a character that I'm rooting for in his matches. So my eyes were entirely on him, just seeing, like, if I could pinpoint exactly, it's so subtle that I can't really pinpoint it, but just, there's just that much more expression to what he's doing, and it's enough. And my note on Diamond Mine's involvement is that Diamond Mine as a collective feels like such a, and then I didn't finish the sentence. Which might be apt, because that's, I think, it feels like such a blank is pretty much to my point. Like, I really like Ivy so far. I really like the Creed so far. Don't know anything. I keep on forgetting the coach's name because, you know, he's so unimportant. Keep on forgetting he's even there. Bivins isn't getting...
Hatcherman.
Okay.
Hatcherman.
Okay. Bivins is not getting a chance to do all that much. And Roderick Strong is equal parts in the way of other people's trajectories and also only just there to give people good matches and that's it. And Hayes doesn't really need that, but fine. Are we in yet another situation where we want to wonder if this is going to be a retirement of the cruiserweight belt? I don't think on this short of a build, not really. Although I guess we were talking about that with the very short and out of nowhere build that was the Joe Gacy thing. So I don't know. I'm already at way more than I intended to say about this. It's just like the diamond mine does not seem like a sum of its parts.
Know what they need? Russ Taylor.
You know what? I think you're onto something. You pulled that out of the ether, and that would be an interesting journey.
I miss him so much, you guys. I miss him so much. Let's go to some other stuff that happened. Indy Hartwell called Grayson Waller a douche. Gacy and Harland showed up. Harland was behind him. And Gacy said some words. Ciampa, he opened the show with a long promo on Bron Breakker. He did the heavy lifting in the talking department because, of course, he would have to in this situation. I really liked the approach to this with Ciampa not showing weakness because he's not a heel, but still trying really hard to break Breakker and make him and rack him with self-doubt. I thought that was fun what he was doing. Say, hey, it only takes one mistake, but you definitely won't do it again. You definitely won't do it again. I really thought that Ciampa shines in a lot of slightly different types of promos, and I thought this was a little bit of a step in a different direction for him, like a small step in a different direction, but a different direction nonetheless. And I loved it. Breakker didn't have to do much. I really liked the touch of him picking up Ciampa to press slam him and then just setting him down and smiling because he doesn't need to soften him up. He believes it was just like the, I believe in myself moment. Who's the face here? I think that's a great question, and I don't know that it needs to be answered. I think it works regardless. I liked this segment pretty unreservedly, Tom.
Yeah, I agree on the babyface question. I was a little worried that Breakker seemed neutered by reaching for the mic, and then Ciampa said, don't give him a mic, and the stagehand deferred to the champ, and Breakker was just sort of like, okay, I guess I'll just stand here then. But judging from his demeanor, you know, yes, he wasn't asked to do much, but judging from his demeanor, he didn't seem like he was out of his depth. Even when, and who knows like what they ran through ahead of time. But even in the moment where he was holding Ciampa's belt and saying something to Ciampa at the very end there, Ciampa just like spazzed out and grabbed onto the belt to do not really a tug of war, but to hold onto it at the same time. And Breakker wasn't fazed by it at all. Didn't break his cadence, just seemed very confident. So that at least was a good look for him. And Ciampa, I didn't view it as too different from what he's been doing before. I think he's still serving the role as the black and gold champion that still persists and is speaking on behalf of the fans who still value, that period of NXT when we were seeing less developmental on the screen, and more of the finished products and the work rate and everything. And Ciampa, of course, is an incredible example of excellence in the ring and in character presentation. I don't find him as exciting as I used to, but clearly a lot do, and he's playing right to those people, which I think is perfect and what he should be doing right now. I think that about covers it until without stepping on our email about it.
Yeah, and I'm very much in the same boat with Ciampa, where I still really appreciate him. I like him, but I'm not – he doesn't feel like appointment TV. And like, what do I want to say? He's just not – I don't know. I'm not popping for anything necessarily on this TV show, even though I'm kind of looking forward to it these days. Yeah, I'm weird, folks, but that's true. I'll mention the other two matches. If you got something to say, do. If you don't, then don't. Idris Enofe, he's only been on twice so far, and he's dropped both of his matches, even though they were – he got some minutes. He went with Solo Sikoa. Weirdly, wasn't mentioned this week. And last week went up against – or before that – I actually don't remember who he jobbed to that first time. But, yes, so we had him against Von Wagner, and Robert Stone was out to watch what was going on, obviously interested in Wagner. Enofe wins this one kind of out of nowhere, reversing a slam into a sort of destroyer-ish thing. I'd have to watch it again because I didn't write it down, even though I meant to. In just 67 seconds, Idris Enofe wins his first match on TV. Von gets his heat back afterwards by beating the hell out of Enofe, and then he walks out and he bumps into Stone on the way. Stone turns and smiles because this loss opens the door for him to be the guiding light for Wagner, which, you know what? This works for me because we need Von Wagner not talking. And I want to see what Stone can do in the confines of a manager who is a little more serious. Like, he doesn't have to be too serious for me. But the Stone character as it existed was done. Io Shirai versus Electra Lopez. Io has been a miracle worker at times, but Electra is a lot. This went 404. Electra is still very, very raw in there. Zion Quinn shows up while this is going on, goes to the apron with mistletoe to put that between he and Electra Lopez. Timing could have been better here because by the time we were really getting into the will they or won't they moment, Legato pulled him, Zion Quinn, from the apron too quick and kind of stomped on the woman's toes. But what are you going to do? Io Shirai wins as a result of this. And again, Vic refers to over the moonsault as moon over moonsault, which makes no effing sense. Anything on those, Tom?
Actually, yes. And when you said mistletoe, I forgot about the actual mistletoe, and I was like, who has a move called mistletoe? That's kind of a cool name. All right.
It is. Now but, I want someone to have that.
This was the most palatable segment this entire ill-begotten Lopez and Quinn storyline has had thus far, so there's that. You know, yeah, you said miracle worker. At the very least, a lot has been asked of Io Shirai in the 2.0 era, working with Persia and JC in that one match. And, you know, and she had Tom Caster by her side. Tonight, she did not have Tom Caster by her side. I should have by now, but I have not gone out of my way to learn the name of this referee. But she is newer, for what that's worth in this context. So I was ready to sit back and see what Io could pull out of Lopez and maybe surprise me. And there really just wasn't much to this at all. What we got was very simple and straightforward and really just background to what they were doing with Zion Quinn, which, as I implied, has just been a terrible storyline that I have zero interest in. I think the most compelling element of it is just what was the intention with the brass knuckles, which I say that it was the most compelling element of it. We didn't even deem it worthy of discussion on our podcast when we were looking to trim some fat the week that it happened. I'll just circle back and say that I think she was pulling a Paul Heyman, putting him in there and saying that she was going to walk out with whoever won. But they continue to bring that up. And Wagner and Inoue. So I guess I like that you perceived that Stone was happy with Wagner losing because he viewed that as his in. That makes a lot of sense. I didn't see it that way because, well, I mean, I see it that way now. I think you are correct in that perception. I didn't see it that way in the moment because my perception of Robert Stone is as an absolutely insufferable character. I can't stand him on my TV, which would be a good thing if there was any purpose to it. But there's nothing productive about this character. I don't even want to see him get beat up. I just want him to go away. And I feel like that would have been, I had finally resolved that maybe we could solve the Robert Stone problem by putting him with a winning wrestler. And maybe that is what Von Wagner is going to become. But when I saw Wagner surprisingly lose what seemed like it was going to be an easy squash match for him, and then Stone got happy about the loss, I was like, is this just going to be Aaliyah all over again? He was excited that she lost. And I think, wasn't it the same thing with Chelsea Green? She was just losing all the time. And it's just this dude manages losers. So I came out of this kind of concerned. But maybe you have dampened those concerns a little bit.
And I am trying to be positive on this. So maybe that's part of it, too. I think there's value in the guy performing Robert Stone. But man, have they taken that character to some just really insufferable. It's the word.
And I do remember enjoying him, the very little bit of him that I saw on TNA. So, you know, it is this version of the character, not the man himself.
Yeah. And he was on The Amazing Race with, I think, his girlfriend at the time. They did well. They got fourth place. And he was pretty they didn't super mesh with a lot of the other teams. I mean, wrestling's a really weird world. They're really different people, but they got along with people. They ended up getting fourth place, which is pretty damn good. They were on all the episodes except the last, probably. I'd have to go back to see if it was three or four on the last episode. Ladies and gentlemen, I co-run a collectible shop. I open cards often, sports cards, but I've been opening some wrestling cards lately. I opened two wrestling boxes that were guaranteed two autographs each. And in both boxes, one of my autographs was Robert Stone. And I had to text Tom both times because of his strong feelings on Robert Stone.
Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, I mean, I knew you would laugh at my pain. And you said you'd like to laugh, but you were just sad.
Other one was Otis, right? Your third one was Otis?
Yes. My Otis one actually is worth money because it's low numbered. You know, people don't. To the non-collectors, they got to be like, what in the hell is he talking about? So there's only 25 of this one parallel color made, and it's that, and it's Otis. Of course, my brother gets a low-numbered Alexa Bliss, a card that he can sell for $250.
Wow. Well, I'm sure that Otis didn't have much time to sign the cards because I remember when he main evented an NXT house show and my daughter stayed in the front row. She was the last one in that section and he walked right past her and she was just reaching out and he was a baby face at the time. Of course he was. And as she was just reaching out, it was just like, yay, Otis, yay, Otis. Or she probably wasn't. She probably didn't know his name, but you know, a little girl reaching out for a high five. He just stood there, stared at her and then walked to the back. And, yeah, I don't know.
But why?
Well, there was a moment where he stood there and just stared and then decided to keep going.
Who does he think he is? Mason Ryan? Because 8 years back, Mason Ryan was getting cheered by exactly one person and he no-sold her.
Yep, yep.
But what a putz.
Shut up, Aunt Susan.
Oh, and he signed it, Otis did, at this weird time where the card says Otis, but they don't sign them on the cards. They sign on stickers, and then the stickers get put on the cards months later when the cards are produced. But by the time the card was produced, his name was just Otis. But when he signed, his name was Otis Dozovich. So that's how he signed. So it was kind of a weird thing. I mean, given the changes in NXT, like half the people in the NXT set are gone. Anyway, we should probably go to some emails because there are five left. Two of these are just basically just amusements. This one is from Paul Robinson. Hi, guys. Have just watched War Games and thought it was pretty good considering the number of rookies in the main events. I just wanted to mention that when Kelly mentioned the bad acting of putting your hands on your head to signify shock, it took me back to when I had Danny Baker's own Goals and Gaps VHS, a collection of football clips. He starts one section by talking about when he did drama at school and was asked to act shocked. He put his hands on his head. He was then told, like you said, that it was a cliche and no one does that in real life. Of course, he then showed a series of clips of players scoring own goals and making terrible back passes, after which they, of course, stood there with their hands on their head. Happy memories. Keep up the good work. Paul in Staffordshire, UK. Yes, so there's a difference, of course, and this is an amusement to me, too, because the hands-on-head thing in dejection is real, but it's done in a different way than the very demonstrative way that nobody's worse than at Ty Conti. It's hilarious to me how bad she is at that. And the big gaping mouth, it's just hilarious. And it just situationally, it doesn't look like it would make sense. And there's a different body language to it as well. But in soccer, that is like you'll see the guys when they're trying to sell shock to the ref when they know that they're the bad guy. They'll do the bad acting hands on head. And there's a difference between those things. I would still say to any actor, even if you see people do this in real life, it's too cliche to actually do. And that's not the only one of those. Oh, I was thinking of another one of these the head of our department was talking about parallel gestures. You don't want to make parallel gestures with your hands and like move your hands like parallel to each other as you're talking. It's something that a lot of young actors do when they're freshmen coming into school, and it's just horrible to watch and boring to watch. And he just said, don't do parallel gestures. Do not do parallel gestures. Nobody does them. And the whole time that he said it, he was parallel gesturing and was not aware. And we all kind of like chuckled. And he said, okay, hold on. I understand what just happened. Don't do it on stage. And he had nothing else to say about it. It's just very uninteresting as a stage thing. So I could talk this stupid stuff forever, obviously, but I'll move on. This is from Sean O'Hearn in Texas. Want to start out by saying, I know this may not make much sense, and it may just be me, but Ciampa's promo sounded a lot like how HBK would do in his promos with his mannerisms and the way he spoke, his body language. I just found that interesting. Now hear me out. Do we see Breaker beat Ciampa at New Year's Evil? Ciampa challenge for a rematch to make this a trilogy. Have Braun go over and quite possibly see Tommaso go up to main roster. Let's face facts, there isn't much left for him in NXT anyway. The street fight was good for what it was, but just seemed too damn short. I think it was way too long, and I think every street fight is way too long. Anyway, this was the first time AJ Styles has ever been on NXT because I can't think of a time he has. And what does this mean between him and Waller in y'all's opinions? This trio of MSK and Riddle is 100% an homage to the Bill and Ted movies. Riddle obviously being George Carlin's character, Rufus, and MSK as Bill and Ted, especially with Riddle calling out them Stallions. Wild Stallions is the name of their band in the movie, which of course I'm sure y'all have seen. And if not, please watch them, called Classics. Anyway, sorry for the book I'm writing. Y'all have a great night and happy holidays to y'all and your families. Merry Christmas. I love the Bill and Ted movies, both of them. And let's not compare MSK and Riddle, especially Riddle to Rufus. You know, it might be a reference to those movies, but I really like those movies. And these scenes for me are not doing it. As far as Tommaso going up to the main roster, I mean, it's with so many guys, I would say that's what is going to happen. But I don't think it's what Ciampa wants. Tom?
I just wonder if Ciampa's priorities have had to change with recent changes in the company. And you know, the mutual interest has to be there as well. So, yeah, it's really going to have to be a wait-and-see thing. I think there is still value in him as NXT champion right now. Braun could very well be on the fast track, and I do think that the past 3 weeks have really put Grayson Waller in an interesting position to be the next champion. I think the storyline is there, and the heat is there, and he could be similarly hated to how Ciampa was, and granted, like, in the building, we were losing our minds in excitement, but as Ciampa was when he won the championship himself, maybe a nice mirror to hold up there. Both Bill and Ted movies. So not only has Sean outed himself as someone who does not listen to 8 years back, but Kelly, did you never see Face the Music?
Oh, snap. I never got around to it, Tom.
I guess the similarities are there. I gotcha. Obviously the similarities are there. I think the MSK stuff, which is just, it's somehow getting even more stupid and poorly filmed and worse edited and less believable and even more damaging to my perception of MSK, and even less congruous with how Riddle is being presented on the main roster as it goes. I don't know how these continue to get worse and worse and worse, but I do view them as more Dude, Where's My Car than Bill and Ted. The original Bill and Ted is one of my favorites, not just favorite comedies, one of my favorite movies. The HBK connection is maybe there's something there. I think I would connect it most in that sense to how, like, the DX days, and how Ciampa is sort of like, he's anticipating the wrestling TV tropes of being, oh yeah, I'm sure he's going to come out and interrupt me, and he's done that sort of thing before. The Paul email we did get earlier, and we kept it on red so you could field it. I thought it was funny that it came in on the same week that I was on Blake and Sal, and they released a clip of me talking about Joe Gacy, and just my reaction to realizing I had to talk about Joe Gacy was right there on video, putting my hands on my head, and I was like, oh, so some people do it, and apparently I'm one of them. But I will say, Danny
You're
Baker's
dead to
own
me.
Danny Baker's own goals and gaffes of VHS. I don't know that specific one, or at least I don't think I do, but in case we have any younger listeners, and I know Kelly, you remember these too, VHSs of sports bloopers, a lot of which were staged for these videos and not actually real, because they were way too cartoonish, but they would add, like, cartoon sound effects and whatnot to them. Those existed pre-internet. Like, this stuff existed pre-internet, and it's hard to believe that it did. Like, I don't know how America's Funniest Home Videos is still a thing. I'm pretty sure it is. I don't know if it's like,
it is.
It's bizarre to me. But even like, just recently I was watching, after watching Get Back, I pulled up some old Beatles interviews, and I pulled up an interview with Lennon and Yoko on the Dick Ebersol show. And they played some short films that they had made. And one of them, Yoko providing the voice of a fly that was crawling around on somebody's body. And the other one was a photographic time lapse of a building being built. And these were like their creative endeavors of the early 70s. And just like, they were viewing themselves as these, you know, creative filmmakers presenting these short films and bringing them to festivals. And I'm like, nowadays, those are just basic TikToks. So
yeah,
the internet has changed a lot.
Yeah. I was thinking that too with these, if you want to watch sports bloopers, if you feel like that, when you wake up, you can do it from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to sleep and not rewatch any sports bloopers. Just watch different ones all day. In those days, my neighbor had a baseball bloopers video. We'd watch it and be like, bloopers are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, well, I guess we can watch that 35 minutes of them again. Like, that's it. That's your option. But it was a good video, and I remember some of the bloopers, and I certainly remember the cartoon sound effects, which detracted, folks. They did not add.
Yes. I mean, hey, I had what was it, like the best of Monday Night Raw you know, however they titled it. And it was just an hour long of the same exact segments over and over again. But I watched the hell out of that tape.
Yep. Let's go to Brian Alston. Karen Q or Karen U? That is all. Also, go VIP and listen to NXT 8 years back every Saturday. Well, thank you for that plug. Tom, Karen Q or Karen U?
Yeah, I had to look it up and see that Karen U is her shoot name, but I always appreciate the reminder because I usually accidentally call her Karen O. Looking forward to seeing how she portrays this character in the ring. I believe she's absolutely up to the task, but it'll be interesting to see how the sleepy character, the perpetually sleepy character, always just looking for somewhere to cuddle up with her sleep mask, is going to translate between the ropes. I expect it to be amusing.
Kevin Cantani says, salutations and happy holidays, gents. I hope this email finds you well and ready to celebrate the holidays. After watching the main event, I'm happy they are continuing to show love to Pete Dunne. And now that the fates of Johnny Gargano and KOR are largely up in the air, despite the idea that they're headed to other pastures, that basically leaves the Bruiserweight and Ciampa left as the primetime OG players. What do you all think is the prognosis for the black and gold holdovers? Will they continue to be featured, or are they slowly being phased out? Thanks as always, go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The Professor Kevin P. Catani, PhD, continue to be featured? I think they've been quickly phased out. Yeah, I think that it makes sense to center the show with a few of them. I'm surprised they felt that they needed to rip the Band-Aid off this much rather than slowly get these people ready for TV. I think there is very little value in taking somebody like Electra Lopez and putting her in a spot where she's in a storyline and working matches and she can't do either. And she might have raw talent, but there is a difference between watching developmental and watching somebody who just completely does not have, and we're watching auditions right now. And I liked watching auditions every couple of months for an hour because you would get some funny stories to tell people because you'd see some really bad auditions. But people going out and having auditions every week on TV, it almost seems cruel. I don't even know what else to say about it. Anything on this, Tom?
When it comes to people like Electra Lopez, I do agree with you, although I've even started looping 205 Live back into my weekly rotation just because it's getting us looks at, like, Tiffany Stratton has wrestled. It's just not been mentioned on NXT. Lash Legend has wrestled twice. And so those are the and of course, because I have to mention her every time, Yulisa Leon. She finally got a win. It's not Rita Reyes anymore. It's the one that Vic Joseph pronounces differently every time.
Feroce.
That's what he says now. Is
Valentina?
Feroce. Yeah, Valentina. I got used to Feroce, but the ring announcer and Vic each pronounce it differently.
Well, where is she from? Because it should be
Brazil. She's a Brazilian.
Oh, okay. So I'm not 100%, but I would have said Feroce has to be right.
Yeah, and that's how the ring announcer says it. And which I say the ring announcer, I mean, it's always Alicia Taylor, but is it Alicia Taylor on 205? I'll have to pay attention to that next time. I'll just have to. It's so important. Yulisa is Mexican, a legacy power lifter, if I remember correctly. So beside the point, but I have enjoyed going out of my way for what I agree are basically audition matches on TV and seeing, you know, the curiosity of what Lash Legend brings, even though based on how her segments have gone so far, yes, they haven't been wrestling segments, but you see that and it's hard to imagine much behind it. And you see the matches and you're like, yeah, it's about what I would expect. And then you see Tiffany Stratton. It's like, okay, there's more promise here. It'll be interesting to see her put together the, yeah, what else on this? I guess I realized, I realized tonight. There has not been much, it's not seemed like there's been much of a future in NXT for Pete Dunne for a long time, but he keeps hanging around. And tonight, I think I was really just like, man, it's between Breaker and Waller for me right now as to who the next NXT champion is going to be. A few months ago I was saying Kyle O'Reilly for sure, like no question about it. But it just, Pete Dunne is just nowhere near that conversation, and I don't think he's going to be again. So it's the same situation as Ciampa. Like, is there a mutual interest in the main roster? And if there isn't, he said tonight that he's 28. It seems like it's too young to think about becoming a PC coach, but I think that might be in the conversation for Ciampa. I think it's either way, as far as the television is concerned, these are characters that we are going to see phased out.
Yeah, I don't know. With Pete Dunne, I find him if I'm comparing him to the WWF of my youth, I'm comparing him to Jake the Snake or even Hacksaw Duggan, where it's like, you can't imagine them going away, but they literally have zero prospect of ever being champion. Like, it will never, ever happen. I just don't see it. And I think you're right. It could be Breaker, but they don't have to do that. I don't know if they knew what they had on their hands with Waller. They've given him the ball and he is running with it. The way that he didn't no sell what AJ was saying, but he kept being cocky even while AJ was talking. And lesser performers, which is plenty of actors, but most wrestlers, think when it's not their turn to talk, it sounds like this should be easy to understand, but most people who go into acting in their first year are like, well, I'm not talking, so I'll stop acting. And he was just relentless. I think that the upside is massive on him. And we have over the years talked a lot about somebody who could be a Miz type heel, but this is the definitive guy who I think could be a Miz type heel. Let's go to David Podnar for our final email. And the title of it is We Get It. It's 2.0 versus Black and Gold. First off, with a positive, the street fight was great. If I'm fighting someone in a blood feud, which if you look at me is a bad idea, I'm not waiting in the ring for the bell. I'm attacking as soon as possible. Both Raquel and Dakota were great and believable. If this is Dakota's going away match to the main roster, it was a good match. For the rest of the night, we are hit repeatedly on the head that it's new versus old, and I'm done with it. The matches will probably be good, but continually being reminded by commentary and in promos, it's new versus old is just too much. You can have new versus old matches without spelling it out again and again and again. Have a good and safe holiday, Dave Podnar. Now, Dave is pretty positive. So for him to hit us with a negative is a rarity. It's old versus new for a purpose, because like the real reason is that the new versus new is not going to develop in matches against each other. They're just not. Somebody's got to call the match, and they need to work with better wrestlers to get better. It's just that simple. And you also are right, Dave, that announcers don't have to frame it as that over and over and over. We get it. Just present the match as if it's a real contest. That's fine with me. I did not think that the street fight was great at all. I strongly dislike street fights, strongly. That said, there have been some that I like. I think most, if not all of them, overstay their welcome. I think they should be shorter than normal matches, not longer, to sell the violence inherent in them. But people have been conditioned to think they should be longer, just in the way that I used to go on I used to talk in the IMDb comment section, which, by the way, don't do.
Yeah.
and people would say,
why did the guy just come up to him and shoot him in the head and he was dead? I think it's way more believable when the bad guy fights back. And I'm like, he took a bullet point blank to the head at like point blank. There's no fighting back. Pop, done. You're done. And they've seen so many movies. They were like, they didn't say it's more cinematic or more enjoyable. They said it's more realistic that the bad guy would fight back. That's what fake violence makes people think is real, folks. And that's why we can't have nice things. On David's email, Tom.
See, if I had directed The Lord of the Rings, I would have put Shelob in the Two Towers. And, okay. I'll level with Dave here. I started to feel tonight, and yeah, you know, Vic lays it on thick because that's the WWE way of producing commentary. But I did start to feel tonight that the almost exclusive 2.0 versus black and gold matches that we've been getting started to feel a little desperate tonight. Like I've said on, you know, just like half an hour ago, that there's value in Ciampa doing what he's doing. There's value in going the distance with Pete Dunne, that kind of thing. But just doing that exclusively does feel like every single segment they are trying to frame something as like, hey, accept these new people because they're standing next to somebody that you liked before, right? So tonight did start to smell of a little bit of desperation to me. So I can level to that extent.
Yeah, there was only one new versus new tonight. It was 67 seconds long.
yeah, that's right.
yeah, that was it. Yeah, there's been a lot of NXT faces that are gone. There were Triple H guys, a lot of new ones that are Vince guys, and it seems like Raquel is the one that they all agree on. And I'm like, guys, you can both be wrong. yeah, so okay, I'll be nice. I probably won't, but I'll try. Okay, I probably won't. I'm Kelly Wells, and you can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or at spookymilk.games, Tom.
I am at Tom Staup on Twitter, and the next time we speak with you, it will be on Christmas Day on the VIP side of things. So just remember, as we were told tonight on the NXT program, it is the season of giving. So go to a local gymnasium full of children and don't wear a mask.
I wasn't going to bring up that segment.
We are NXT, all these children wearing masks and all the wrestlers spitting all over them.
Oh, I didn't even notice that because I was too busy thinking about the fact that I was like, oh, it's not the main roster or main roster light unless you've got hated heels being extremely warm, kind people enjoying children and animals. All right, we will see you in 7, folks. Cheers. Compact.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And we didn't even talk about how Imperium's subtitles showed up on the screen before they even started talking. okay, so my children are home from school. I guess yours are as well. You good for the usual time tomorrow, or do we need to shift it?
Mine are actually at school tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for the last day before break.
It is. It's my son's birthday tomorrow, although we aren't doing anything until the evening. Like part of me feels shitty being like, all right, well, daddy's got to work today. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yep. Yeah. Yesterday was my anniversary. We both guessed wrong. She said to me, Well, happy 17th birthday, 17th anniversary. And I was like, I think you'll find it's the 19th. And
it wasn't the 18th.
And we were literally like talking about it, but not like doing the math. We were just saying it. And then she was like, here, this is a card from my mom. And it said, happy 18th anniversary. She goes, Mom, it's not 18th. And I just thought about it for half a second. I'm like, Kathy,
I think your mom might be correct.
yeah, she was indeed. Have to think about it. And Jamie and I have never, I don't think we've ever decided, because I guess for you, anniversary, you're going by getting married, right?
Yes, we are. If we want to do anniversary of like when we, it's kind of, you know, when you get into a real relationship, sometimes it's not real obvious when it begins.
Yeah.
Ours, we kind of had the date. We had a first, like we didn't have a date that night, but it was the first time we really talked and it was like, let's give it a go. This feels pretty right. It was St. Patrick's Day.
Right. Yeah.
So it's really easy to remember. Yeah.
Yeah,
St. Patrick's Day, like a year and a half before we got married.
For us, it wasn't as nebulous. It was pretty much all, you know, contained into one evening where we were like, oh, this is happening. And because it, you know, it was like the date started in the afternoon the prior day. But when we realized like, oh, okay, this is happening, it was already past midnight. So we go by a certain day usually, but then we're also like, wait, but it was technically the other date by the time, and we've never really agreed on what we should settle on, but it's either 13 or 14 years now. I'm math and I do not get along. I think